Welcome to Inspired Artist Podcast with me, Sirgun Kaur. I'm so excited to get to share this conversation that I had with my longtime friend, Mike Tamburo, who is a sound healing virtuoso. He is really fun to talk to. I got to have many conversations with him when we were housemates in Kundalini Yoga teacher training in New Mexico. We share in this episode a lot of how our music and our lives have evolved since that time. And he has since really committed to the life of a touring artist. It was fascinating to hear him talk about the way he approaches his art and his setup and the energy and the love that he puts into it. We talk about the difference between acting and truly being, letting go of rigidity. He's super well read. It's really fun listening to him talk about the books that he's read and the information that he's gained from his life of being a learner and a teacher now. And so I'm excited to get this started. Let's go.
Okay.
All right. So thank you, Mike, for joining me today.
Good.
How are you doing?
I'm excellent, Sirgun. Good to be with you again.
Yeah. So the first time we met was in teacher training in Española, and a lot has obviously happened since then. And you said you're in San Jose right now, yeah?
Well, I'm on tour. So I'm just, moving through California right now, and I'll be heading to Oregon next week.
Cool.
So this weekend I'm playing in the Bay Area.
How many shows do you do a week about?
Well, it kind of varies. This current tour that I'm on right now, I would say began in May. And some weeks I was doing 5 concerts a week. Some weeks I was doing 4 concerts a week. Usually I do at least 3 a week.
Wow.
I've kept myself pretty busy this summer.
Yeah. And so that's something you like doing, right?
Traveling and playing music for people. Yeah, I love it.
I want to time out for 1 second here. I'm curious if we end the video, if your audio will come in a little clearer.
Oh, maybe.
You want to try that?
Let's see. Yeah, there is some kind of CPU thing coming up.
Yeah, I think that's better. I think, let's just do it without the video.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool.
All right. It's certainly easier to communicate with a person face to face.
I know. I like that. But now that I know what you look like, I know what your outfit is.
Okay.
I have a good idea of who I'm talking to. Yeah.
Okay. I could certainly bring my computer closer as well if that.
No, I think it was like a bandwidth thing. I think maybe where you are just doesn't have the, what it needs for us to do audio and video together, which is fine.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. So where are you off to next?
So I'll be going to Oregon. I'm going to visit a friend for a few days, and then I'm playing in Portland and Bend and Corvallis. Which is near Eugene.
Okay.
And
I was going to ask.
And then I'm going to go to Montana, and then I'll go to Washington, and then I'll come back to California.
Cool.
Yeah. So, I wanted to give myself a little more time on the Northwest. I'm not playing quite as much as I usually do, but I still have a pretty full schedule, and I have a 5-day workshop that I'm doing in Seattle as well.
Yeah. So your what is it? Your reputation, I think, is because I've heard a few people talk about you in the, our scene, our mantra scene. You're talked about it. Like you have this epic setup and breakdown.
That is the truth. I do have an
revere. So let's demystify it. How long does it take for you to set up and break down your concerts?
Well, I give myself usually 3 hours, just so I'm not completely insane. So 3 hours beforehand, and then usually 90 minutes at the end. Probably the reality of, you know, physically bringing in you know, all of my stuff, and then getting the stand and the gongs and all the other instruments on the stand. That's probably really only about 90 minutes. And I've had times where I've gotten it done in an hour, but I was like,
that just so everyone is clear. That's just bringing in the instruments. Yes.
Bringing it in and setting it up. Yeah.
And setting it up. Setting okay.
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah, I mean, I take a bunch of trips back and forth from the van and then, set up the stand, put everything on the stand. And then I play dulcimer also.
Right.
And that takes some time to tune. Like some days it tunes really quickly, but you know, moving from kind of like place to place and climate to climate, and I'll have some days where, you know, whatever is going on with the humidity or whatnot, like it just doesn't want to tune as easily. So, you know, I give myself some time to tune, and then you know, wash my face and get dressed and everything like that. I'm usually like a really sweaty mess. Like I show up at most of my concerts probably looking more like I'm working for a moving company.
Well, in a sense you are.
Yeah. I mean, I spend more time driving and moving things than I actually spend playing.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. But as I'm driving and moving things, I'm kind of mentally preparing myself to play most of the time.
Yeah.
And you know, so I mean it's I have a lot of vision, I guess, you know, to have a setup like what I have. And you know, there's kind of like a layered form of music that that I've been trying to create over the last few years that, you know, just requires the setup that I have. And you know, I hear lots of sounds. I don't just hear, you know, the sound of one gong or something. Like I hear... You're kind of like an orchestra of metal in my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. That it's a pretty amazingly immersive experience that you provide. So, I mean, it takes some time. Do you see yourself having help in the future? Is that something you could teach someone to do for you?
Yeah, I love it. I love to have help. I mean, you know, I certainly get help at different concerts, you know, like often the studio owner will help me or, uh-huh. or whatnot. But, I think that, you know, I'm planting a lot of seeds in my mind right now and I'm trying to teach myself, how to orchestrate other people better.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I certainly can move around, you know, pretty quickly and deftly and get the music out that I physically can get out. But if I had like four more arms, I think that it would be a very different kind of music. And so I've been thinking a lot about, you know, orchestrating the gong and kind of putting together some kind of ensemble, to play, you know, some of the music that I've composed and I give myself lots of kind of like improvisational games, you know, and to kind of play those games with people. So I think things are maybe changing. You know, I've been really traveling pretty hard for the last 5 years. So I do see myself at some point settling down and finding a room where I can, you know, ponder, you know, the mysteries of life and the mysteries of music and compose a little bit more, and then also maybe direct a group, like put together some kind of ensemble. So you know, it takes me time to learn things and I have all these different interests. So it's like, you know, one thing kind of happens at a time.
Yeah.
And I think that like what I've really been working on a lot was like getting a certain set of instruments together that, really worked well together and really, could be played with intention and could be played in a way where, you know, now I can have 16 people playing, you know, different metal instruments at the same time and have it sound really good and work mm-hmm. together. And know, I get that happening in 3 days in my trainings. You know, it's like, you know, sometimes like it happens in the first song we play, but like by the last song we play, like we're really a tight unit. So I think that, you know, help is something that is on the way. I'm just trying to find people in the right place. I think that the place will come first and then the people will show up. But
yeah, well, it sounds like they already are. And when you were talking about, you know, being open to help and having these help, that was the first thing I thought of was, oh, it sounds like you're preparing to build a school and your students are going to be your like band members. So it sounds like that's kind of happening.
I think that's sort of what happens in my workshops right now. And it's funny because like some of this stuff has gotten recorded, but a lot of the music, I'm the only one that's heard it. And my recorder broke sometime on this tour and I was just like, well, you know, I think it's okay. I'm just going to just listen. And the people that I've been working with, just been really dedicated musicians. And a lot of people don't even realize they're musicians, you know, when we first meet. But I like that too. Like I like working with people who are fresh and people who, maybe are, you know, I always think of myself as still learning. So I like that idea of just like meeting people on their path of learning and figuring out music. And you know, what nobody like tells you, I think, is that, you know, it's like you're sort of like, at least for myself, like, you know, every song that I play, like that's sort of like the best of my ability. And then like a new song comes and maybe I learned a little bit from that last song and then I play that to the best of my ability. But you know, when I think back 20 years ago, whenever I was writing, I was still doing the same thing. It's like I was playing guitar and I could only do, you know, a little bit. I could play like 3 chords and I played them to the best of my ability and the music came out. And so I'm trying to kind of like foster an environment where, you know, no matter where somebody is at in their development as a musician or as a gong player, that like I can meet them and play with them and get them in the groove and get them in the music. And it's been really beautiful. And so just, you know, the dedication of people who are trying to learn the gong, I think is really beautiful. And I've been having a good time.
That's awesome. It must on a certain level be a little bit more freeing to create music when you don't consider yourself a musician. I'm just thinking, I work with people now who I work with a channel and we guide them through this boot camp, and the people who seem to have an easier time at it are the ones who don't already consider themselves spiritual because they don't have like a fixed idea of what that means. And so I'm thinking, for a musician, that would be pretty liberating too, where you don't have to, you know, you're not posturing, you're not, you don't have a preconceived notion of what this music means about you, I guess.
Sure. Well, you know, the gong also, I think, is an instrument that really opens people up. You know, you never quite know exactly what it's going to do. I mean, you have some like really, I have really good ideas. I mean, I'm certainly composing for the instrument at this point, but it's always a little bit different. It's always like very specific to the moment. But there's something I always joke about in my classes is that my dog will often just like walk up to the gongs and start wagging his tail against one of the gongs. And the gong makes a sound, you know, and he's okay. You know, his timing is all right, but like his pressure isn't the best. You know, he could get a better touch, but you know, the instrument makes a sound as soon as you touch it. And I think that's really liberating for a lot of people. I think that it makes musicians think about time in a different way. Like even if you've already been playing music, I mean, it's like you're used to playing, you know, eighth notes or quarter notes. And you know, certainly that you could still be playing that on the gong, but like the tone that is produced is something that is much longer. So it really makes you relate to the instrument in a different way. I think a lot of people get biases, you know, like what you're talking about with the, you know, people who already think that they're spiritual have a hard time, you know, learning different things, or people who think that they're already musicians have a hard time learning. And those biases, I think, are really meant to be broken. I'm trying to break mine all the time. And just, you know, for me, like what I say to my students a lot is like, look, it's like, that's okay. Like if somebody's really rigid and they're saying like, oh, I heard you only do it like this. I was like, well, you know, like you can do it like this. You know, that is a way, but then there's another way. Like, let's call that like one song. And now here's another song. And that seems to be sort of really freeing for a lot of people to go like, oh, okay. Like what I was doing before is still okay. And I can also do this. Mm-hmm. And my friend Mitch and I, Mitch Ner, you know, he says, this is the skill set, you know, like the idea is that we're really trying to, you know, develop a skill set, you know, with, you know, whatever it is, our spirituality or with our musicianship, so that we can respond however, you know, the time is asking us to respond. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, rigidity is something that we do to ourselves that maybe we shouldn't do to ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, like I think that, you know, at least my life has really asked me to be like really flexible. And maybe it's just because, you know, I'm traveling almost every day of my life and waking up in a different place almost every day of my life. But I think that, you know, these times are asking for flexibility. And, you know, whenever we're working on ourselves and trying to create these spaces of transformation and change, like we have to be willing to meet that change.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. That's a big part of my journey currently, as well as, taking what works and leaving the rest.
Yeah. It's hard.
Yeah.
You know, like everybody's just doing their best. I mean, you'll know this as like a teacher now, you know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. like you've been doing it long enough that, you know, people are listening to you. And then you also realize like how little you know, you know, and it's like, we were kind of like shown this, yeah. like, here is this like template for, you know, how to deliver an experience and mm-hmm. create a space for changing people. But then, you know, your life starts changing
yeah.
over those
yeah.
years and your life yeah. starts changing and you have to, you start saying like, well, what is like honest for me, you know, like, hey, maybe this doesn't work for me, mm-hmm. but this does. And you have to be okay with saying that to yourself and following through. You know,
right.
It's like this path, it's really not static. And especially once you start talking to other people about it, because then it adds this level of, you know, commitment and responsibility that, you know, you don't have whenever it's just, you know, you by yourself.
Yeah. Well, and I think the growth happens as a result of the teaching. So, you know, definitely. There's no sense in waiting until you have it all figured out, because you never will
sure.
to start teaching, you know.
Well, you, I think yeah. that it develops as you do it.
Yeah.
You know, and I know at this point in my life, I'm much more comfortable being like a music teacher than I am a spiritual teacher, because, you know, I feel like, you know, music includes the soul, uh-huh. but it's sort of it like I guess like allows me to communicate in a way that I'm more comfortable, you know, like it feels more universal than my individual meditation or mm-hmm. And so like I'm very comfortable in, you know, this role of, you know, guiding somebody else to think about music in a different way or to listen in a different way or to try something new. And I feel like my spirituality is included in that, and it doesn't feel forced mm-hmm. for me. And so over time, you know, I sort of have come in a circle, I guess, to where it was like I was a musician having all of these ecstatic experiences, and then like I wanted to learn how to, you know, teach it and do it all. And then I think that like maybe my teaching of yoga took over a little bit and you know, and then suddenly it started bringing me back to music. And then I was like, oh, really? I'm just a music teacher. I'm not a yoga teacher, but like music includes yoga, you know?
Yeah. Well, you're really a spiritual teacher and your language is music.
Yeah. Well, I'm something.
I think
I
feel the opposite, which I've always found funny, is that I don't know the first thing about teaching somebody about music.
Uh-huh.
And so the spiritual teaching actually comes a lot more naturally to me.
Well, I think being self-taught on a lot of instruments and just having the audacity to go up on stage as many times as I have, I've been able to sort of tune into what are the basic elements of how I understand music and break it down in a way like, well, how do I teach myself something? How do I write something? It's not necessarily what it was like whenever I'd taken like a music class here or there. It's kind of different, you know. I like Victor Wooten a lot. I think that Victor Wooten has maybe written one of the best music books of all time called The Music Lesson. And in that book, he breaks down all the music into all these different elements, you know, like more than just notes. Like, I think chords are what scare a lot of people away from music. And certainly when I was young, I mean, you're a pianist, so you understand all the contortions that the hand has to go through. But when I was young, trying to learn the piano, like, that wasn't the instrument for me. My hands couldn't make all of those shapes. I know a lot of people get, you know, turned off whenever they can't physically play the instrument that their parents have chosen for them or that they've chosen. But in the music lesson, he kind of breaks it down beyond just like instrument. Like it's like you certainly have notes, but then you have, you know, rhythm and dynamics and your attack and the groove and listening and just all these different elements happening at the same time. And so, you know, my concept with the gong, which like really allows you to, you know, rethink all of the different elements of music, because it really is, it's kind of a different kind of music. You know, that works really well, where I can explain something in a way that it's really more inspiring and creates like a little seed in somebody than necessarily saying like, you have to do it like this. You have to play Beethoven, you know, like.
Right.
Most people don't want to play Beethoven. Like most people just want to like write their own music or sit in front of the gong and play for themselves, or, you know. So I've been really rethinking like how music is being taught, and you know, at least for myself, like I didn't want to necessarily teach how I was taught, which was kind of in a stern way. I mean, like I had a mixture of like, you know, playfulness, because like I just like to play whenever I was young, and I guess I still have that, but then I was often coming into almost like more of an establishment like music situation often, where I was experimenting, and then like I'd go into the situation, they'd be like, no. And I'd be like, what are you talking about? It sounds good. And they're like, it has to be like this. And like,
right.
And so like I feel like, you know, if I didn't have the audacity to keep going and say like, I have something here, you know, there were a lot of times where my music teacher could have stopped me, or where whenever I was in school trying to take music classes, like they could have stopped me. But it didn't. And I play a lot of instruments now, you know, like I'm not necessarily a master at any of them, but like I'm good enough to write a song on a ton of different instruments.
Yeah. That's something that really struck me when I was going through college, actually, because I was a music major and I took an art class. And what I noticed about the visual art department is that they didn't have the same approach to teaching that medium as the music department, because the music department is like, okay, you have to establish this strong foundation, all this theory, all like what everyone's done so far. And then, you know, and then you're ready to go make music. And the art department's like, wherever you are, start there. Like you don't even have to be able to, you know, paint or, you know, draw a figure accurately in order to be a visual art major. You can just start with abstract or, you know, modern or whatever you could name your own style, you know. It's very different than how music's taught.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, that's a really good point. And you know, I was also, I went to school for filmmaking and for art. I didn't finish college. I'd done other things instead of that. But yeah, I've always been around a lot of artists. I've always taken more of like an artistic approach. And I think a lot of the do-it-yourself community, like I would say, like, you know, I was raised in kind of like a do-it-yourself community in Pittsburgh, where it's like a lot of people were like in the punk scene. A lot of people were in experimental music scene. And it was just like, a lot of artists were making music, musicians were making art. And so that was like really natural for me. you know, from a really early age, that's what I was seeing. And I was really comfortable with that. Like I feel, you know, a kindredness to being able just to use, you know, whatever tools you have for expression.
Yeah.
I think that's really important. You know, I that's why I love the voice so much, because it's like, once you get over whether or not you sing well and you just like start singing, you know, something really beautiful can come out.
Was that something you had to get over in order to use your voice?
Well, you know, it's funny, like whenever I was young, I was first the singer. I was more comfortable with, you know, writing kind of somewhat depressing teenage poetry and, you know,
me too,
singing it with some kind of band. And at a certain point, I think that I doubted myself in terms of being a lyricist or something. Like there was something that happened between me and the word. And I started focusing more on like creating instrumental music. And that's really kind of been, you know, part of my life path was, you know, doing instrumental music. It's most of what I do. And then when I started chanting, so like we'll say about 12 years ago, I really started getting into chanting, and that opened up my relationship with my voice again. And that was really important, you know, and at that point, you know, like I'd done tons of records that were instrumental and hardly sang on anything. But when I started chanting, it opened up my relationship with my voice. And that was really important. You know, like so I'd say, you know, for the last 12 years, I've had a really important relationship with my voice, with chanting and with toning. And at this point, like I'm doing a lot of kind of exercises that are somewhat based on some ideas that Pauline Oliveros had in terms of creating, you know, group experiences, group meditative singing experiences. And so like I sort of do different compositions with each group that I play in front of. I get us singing together in different ways and you know, sort of creating a piece of music that will only exist with that group, you know, based on how people participate.
Wow, that sounds like a really wonderful experience.
Yeah, I think that it's pretty positive. You know, what I started seeing for myself, you know, like I have a pretty wide audience, and a lot of my intentions, if I am, you know, any kind of spiritual teacher, is to be universal. You know, like I want to be able to talk to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly yoga has been really important for my life, but a lot of people are coming to me that have no interest in yoga.
Yeah.
And I started seeing, you know, just across the board, well, what happens? Like, what are we doing? You know, like, there's chanting in yoga, at least the yoga that you and I do. There's physical movement, there's breathing, there's relaxation, there's eye focus, there's visualization, there's intention, there's rhythm, you know. So I started to think of that kind of as like universal forms. And when I started doing that, I started seeing that, okay, all of these elements are actually in most spiritual practices.
Mm-hmm.
You have some element of movement, you have some element of breath, you have some element of sound. And so I was like, well, can I just actually bring it down to something that's like very like basic, where like, you know, everybody can make a sound, everybody can breathe, everybody can listen. Mm-hmm. A lot of my exercises are about listening. And so it's like, I think I took everything that I had learned from yoga, and then I started trying to make like a different kind of, experience for people around, you know, listening and then like toning and you know, something that kind of, I think, allows all my worlds to comfortably exist together. But then is like very much welcoming, you know, to anybody. It's like, you know, man, sometimes I have like 90-year-old ladies who like hear that, you know, something interesting happens when Mike Tamburo plays music. And and so like they come and like, I'm essentially like, it's really interesting because like, you know, gong music can be pretty intense, you know, yeah. I mean, it can be pretty I sometimes have, you know, a number of instruments happening at the same time. It's a dense sonic environment, and they love it. And then I imagine if like a 90-year-old woman was going to see like a punk rock concert or like Wolf Eyes, like, you know, like it wouldn't be something like where they would find that same enjoyment.
Right.
But for some reason, you know, I do have like a really wide audience, and I want to in some way be able to give them the benefit of, you know, the things I've learned, that like singing is good, that breathing is good, that listening is good, that visualizing is good, that relaxing is good, and not necessarily make them so uncomfortable, like having to learn something new. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm usually just with somebody for like 2 hours, you know, it's not like I'm like, you're somebody that people just keep coming to see over and over and over again. Like, right. It's usually like a short experience. So as quickly as possible, if I could get people comfortable into an experience where they're, you know, becoming more conscious, breathing more consciously, listening more consciously, feeling more consciously. I feel like that's my job. So I try to do it in a way where I'm not necessarily like making somebody go like, oh my God, is this my religion? Is this not my religion?
Right.
You know, do I know this? Do I not know this? I just want people to be comfortable and be able to have, you know, the experience, you know, that I'm trying to offer right now. And that's changed over the years, you know, how, like what I've been doing has changed over the years, and mostly because it's like, I've done it so much and I've seen a lot of things not work.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm learning in public. I don't know about you.
Oh, I'm definitely learning in public. Yeah. which took me a while to get over. I did not like being in process in front of people.
Yeah. Well, people don't always think that we're people. People often think we have like a lot more like figured out than we have figured out.
Right.
But whatever inspiration, you know, people are able to feel from us, you know, for me, from you, like, you know, coming and being in our presence and making music with us and listening to us, like whatever inspiration they get, like that's amazing. And like, I'm grateful that people can see something in me that inspires them. Like sometimes it's not even me. Like sometimes it's just like they see something and it's like a reflection and it inspires them to do something with themselves. And so, you know, that's why I'm able to go out and not be necessarily fully complete or always having everything together the way that maybe somebody would imagine, but like I'm able to go out and still deliver something that's like honest. And it sort of comes back to like what you said earlier, because you use what you are, you know, able to use, and you let go of everything else. You know, like the stuff from my teachings that like I wasn't feeling or me anymore. If like I'm up there talking about that stuff, it's closer to acting. But right. Like if I'm up there and I'm really saying like what is true for me, then it's, you know, it's really being.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's important. Like I think, you know, that kind of humility is necessary right now. Because I mean, who knows what the heck is happening in the world? You know, I mean, it's like it's different every day.
Yeah, that's such a great point. The difference between acting and being. I like that.
Well. We and can I put think, a lot of stress on ourselves.
Well, I mean, especially that's why I think the people who, you know, have this persona that's pretty well developed of, you know, I am a spiritual person, that can look like a lot of limitation and a lot of pressure. And it can feel really confining. And I mean, to me, spirituality is free. You know, it's freedom. It's feeling your innate freedom. So that can be pretty conflicting.
Yeah, you know, I went through that a lot, actually. I think that I'd formed a rigidity. I think I was almost like destroying my stomach with the amount of like rigidity that I was having around certain things. Oh, it has to be like this. It has to be like this. And
And then life is showing me something different, and I can't go with that flow because it's wrong.
Yeah, well, most definitely, and I think that these are sort of things that, like, you know, we really should, like, you know, talk about. It's, mm-hmm. It's a continuum, you know, and something that like worked for you whenever you were just getting into something and you needed like all of that willpower to like create a change, like you may not need that same rigidity, you know, a few years down the line. Right. You know, it's a, it may be a different kind of self-discipline, you know, but like it can change. Like it, yeah. This is like for you, you know, it's not really for anybody else. And,
right,
and it's really
right.
difficult when we start judging each other and saying like, oh, you have to be at this level of, you know, whatever, you know, cause it's easy. Like I'll say like as for as high up as I've gone, I've also gone just as low,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, it, and it's easy to fall, you know? And so, you know, it's easy. Like I think, you know, Morihei Ueshiba, who wrote the spoke The Art of Peace, you know, he says that you know, little can sometimes become large, and large can become little. Like you don't know necessarily where circumstance is going to take you. Like you can be strong in one situation, and then all of a sudden something else comes up, and it's like, you know, wow, I never learned this. Like I never had the you know, I never had this lesson before. I don't know how to act around this.
Yeah.
And so I think that's like kind of beautiful.
Mm-hmm. You know?
But it definitely, for me, made me have to be flexible in terms of, you know, how I viewed myself. And because I've taken upon myself to be a teacher, you know, it sort of has had, you know, not just a personal effect, but then, like on you know, like how I live my life, but then also on like what I want to share with the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I had this experience. My friend took me to a breathwork class.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was really powerful, and I had this doesn't happen to me. Like I don't hear like. The sound of people's voices or like go, oh yeah, that's, you know, Archangel Michael or whatever, you know, that doesn't really happen to me. But in this uh-huh. space, I heard Yogi Bhajan just send me this message that like filled me with such love. And the message was, you know, this was perfect for you at the time when you found it. And it was never meant to be everything for you.
Uh-huh.
And,
well, that's such a beautiful message.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that, you know, I don't think that he wanted to create people that were just like stuck in time.
Right. Like, no, I don't think so either. Yeah.
So, you know, I think that that's like really like an important, important thing that like, you know, I'll say as like a teacher, I mean, I don't understand the stress he was under first off. Like I have a hard time like keeping track of like 30 people.
Right, right, yeah.
You know, like he was keeping track of like thousands of people.
Right.
But like I'll say that like every person that I meet and talk to, like I'm hoping that they're able to take whatever they're able to get from me and then apply it to everything that they've already had in their lives and then hopefully mash it up in some way where they're able to, you know, become better because of it, you know, mm-hmm. not necessarily be stuck on what I said, but just like be able to, you know, evolve
mm-hmm.
and become a better person than me, you know, like mm-hmm. you use, you know, the good I have, use the bad I have and, you know, whatever you're able to get out of it and hopefully excel from that point. And so like, you know, the evolution aspect is so important. Like we don't want to, you know, I think that like my main job is to like is to not uninspire somebody.
Right? Like, that's a great
you know,
quote.
Like if I uninspire somebody, I've done my job wrong. You know, so like the job is inspiration. It's like people are coming to us for some kind of inspiration, and they're going to use it however they want. Like I don't want a clone of me. Like, I want you know somebody to. You know, write the next great Gong album, you know, like I don't you know, like have like a market on, you know, being the only or the great anything. Like I want everybody to be great. You know, like I want to be inspired by people that I've talked to,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so, yeah, I mean, like that's a lot of stress he must've had going on, and, you know, like having people not leave the nest,
Right. You know, yeah. Well, especially if you think that how someone else is doing reflects on you, you know.
Sure. Well, that's a hard thing too. I mean, like, that's a lot of responsibility.
Yeah.
Because, like, you're only with people for a certain amount of time.
Right. And you can't determine how it soaks into them or how they apply it, or, you know, that's just sure. kind of up
Even
to them.
What was going on in their lives before you
yeah.
met?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like there's a lot of hours in the day and a lot of thoughts per second, and a lot of life that's come before I meet anybody. You know, it's like I have to meet people with, like, the utmost respect and sort of be, you know, just glad that we're together and hope that, you know, we both get something positive out of that experience.
Yeah.
But
I think.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, I think your format lends itself so beautifully to this universalism that you're talking about, because the instruments themselves are so up for interpretation, you know, like,
most definitely.
More so than if you were to hand someone a violin or a piano or something.
Yeah.
Or at least in the way that we think of it. Because technically you could use a violin in a way that nobody ever has, I suppose.
Sure. I've seen
But we come with a preconceived idea when we see a violin, more so than I think a gong, which is probably why those 90-year-old ladies, like, they're not intimidated by, you know, by that.
Well, some are, but some are. But I think that's a good point. You know, there's a, like, kind of like a cultural canon behind a lot of different instruments. And, you know, my thought is, and, you know, I truly believe any instrument changes consciousness, you know, like any instrument that, like, brings you into a song,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, your consciousness is changing. You're following, you know, an artist's rhythm, an artist's voice, you know, like whatever they wanted you to feel. If you've entered into that music,
mm-hmm.
You know, you feel something in relationship to it. You know,
yeah.
I think that's, like, a really important aspect of music is, like, you know, it takes people somewhere. Now, you know, the gong seems to do something slightly, I mean, I still think it's, like, you know, taking you somewhere. Like, a lot, you know, just like everything else, it seems to affect the mind in a slightly different way. You know, the music that has patterns, you know, something where time is stretched out a little bit further seems to affect consciousness in a slightly different way. And mm-hmm. I think this is true maybe for, like, all drone music.
Mm.
You know, music that has, like, longer tones, it seems to affect the mind in a slightly different way, affect the body in a slightly different way.
Yeah.
But the gong is, it's so hard for people to understand it. And something that's so simple, like I said, my dog can play it, but in terms of, like, consciousness, because, like, you know, the timbre, the tonality and the dynamics are changing all the time. And it's almost like an acoustic synthesizer in a way, where you're able to do these, like, filter sweeps. So it's like, I can get the low tones out of the gong by playing this way. And then if I play this way, like, different tones come out. And if I play this way, different tones come out. And I've really studied that, a lot of these instruments. I mean, like, mostly I've studied the ones that, like, I have. So it's like, I can't speak for every gong in the world, but, you know, I've gotten certain things to be where there's some predictability for myself and, you know, I listen to it a lot. So, like, it doesn't surprise me in the way that it used to, but for a lot of people, like, it's like their brain cannot fathom, you know, like, how much something is the same, but yet changing. You know, just like you, like, enter into the drone, but then, like, you're moved all over the place by, you know, how the frequencies are changing, especially if it's a good player who's able to use, like, dynamics and rhythm and space and not just, like, hitting it, but, like, actually, like, really, like, you know, kind of sculpting, you know, in the present. So, you know, there's something different there that draws people in. It's a unique instrument.
Yeah.
I like a lot of instruments, but, like, the gong, whenever I got to that, I was like, you know, like, there's a Zen saying that's, that I'll destroy it now, but it's
all right, I'm ready.
Something along the lines of, like, you know, by learning about one thing, you can learn about the entire universe. Like finding, like, the entire universe and the one.
Yeah.
And I think, like, with the gong, there's, like, something there where it's like, I'll say, like, it's made me have to think about a lot of things that I didn't have to think about when I was just playing guitar.
Right.
In terms of, like, the effect on the listener, in terms of, how it affects the body, or how it affects the nervous system, or how it affects the psychology, or in a person's relationship with harmony. There's a lot I didn't have to think about. Like, I don't think that my guitar playing ever unlocked somebody's trauma.
Right.
Maybe I'm wrong. I'm not always, like, in relation to people as I'm playing, but, like, I don't know that has happened in the same way as happened with the gong. Mm. So there's something really special about that instrument.
Do you find after your classes or your concerts that you're helping people work through a lot afterwards?
I try to make myself available, but something that I also like to say is that, like, if something came up, that there's a strong community usually in place there for people to talk about because I am leaving. Sometimes I have people, write me afterwards to usually just ask if, like, whatever they experienced was okay.
Right.
I think that's, like, an interesting, thing that's, like, often people need permission to feel like, what they experienced was normal, just because, like,
That's an interesting question. When somebody asks, like, so is it normal to, ...
Yeah.
That's something that people get very concerned about.
Yeah. And I mean, like, rightly so. I mean, it's because sometimes, especially if you're really in, like, a place where maybe your reality has been, like, you've gotten used to it.
Yeah. Like, haven't least, we, like, all?
Like, you got, like, really used to, like, how you were thinking, and the chemicals were all working in the way that they're supposed to be working in your brain, and you're in your patterns, and then, like, something, like, your biases are all in check. You're like, okay, this is good, this is not good. If I touch this, I'll get burned. If I don't touch this, all those things are, like, pretty well in place. Uh-huh. And then you lay down and you listen to the gong, and all of a sudden it's like you're hallucinating, and your body is twitching, and you feel something that you've never felt before, or you see something that you've never seen before. And that's a lot. Like, it's a lot of new information for somebody to take in sometimes, and myself included, because, like, I don't think I would be doing what I do if, like, I hadn't been, like, rocked thoroughly by a gong, it just, like, kind of, changed me completely.
Yeah.
And so I think that, a lot of times people need that kind of reassurance that, like, well, yeah, I mean, I maybe haven't had that same experience as you, but, like, you were in it and that came up. And so, like, what does it mean? And, like, the same thing happens with, like, mantras, like, people are chanting the mantra, and, like, all of a sudden, like, the rhythm takes over, and then their, consciousness elevates or moves into some different place than just chanting, and something internally happens, and they've never had that experience before. Like, they don't know what it is. It's, like, kind of like a memory. Like, once they're able to actually, like, talk about it, it's not actually what it was. Like, it's a memory of what it was.
Sure.
And so, like, a lot of times, I think that it's just, like, trying to, create a space where somebody can be, empowered in that process. Now, I set up for myself I've been doing all these different sessions and things over the year. I have, like, what I consider to be what I call a therapeutic container. Mm-hmm. So like my therapeutic container is essentially like everything that is within the experience of somebody being with me in the space. Even before, like hopefully like all the stuff is set up before people get there. And sometimes that happens. And sometimes there are people who are still seeing me in my moving outfit. But you know, it's like I have the lights in a certain way. I have my instruments set up in a way where it's aesthetically beautiful. And something that like, you know, is like, wow, like, you know, there's like, everybody looks at me with anticipation. Like, you know, like I don't have like, you know, somebody that's like looking at me in some kind of jaded humdrum sort of way. Like, it's like, oh my God, like what is going to happen? Like, what is this going to be?
And, it's just like the best part of what we do, I think, is that, well, one of them, but that people come with the intention to be delighted. Yeah. Right? They're not like coming to suss you out, you know? Yeah.
Well, usually not.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, sometimes there are people who are like, oh, well, I do the gong like this. What the heck is that doing? And that's okay. Like, you know, they can do the gong like that.
Yeah.
That's okay. You know, I think there's space enough for everybody. But, you know, so within my therapeutic container, like, I try to get people like comfortable really quickly. And I try to create a space of sensitivity. Like early on and you know, hopefully get people to a place where like, you know, like we all trust each other. Like I need to trust my audience also. Cause like, you know, a lot of times, like, you know, my eyes are, I'm in somewhat of a trance state as I'm moving, you know, through all of these different instruments, and
right.
I need to make sure that the room is not going to go into some kind of chaos around it. But then I want people to trust me as well. And so the way I talk to people, the way I bring people in, I think is important, at least for like how I do it. And you know, I get people breathing, I get people sensitive, I get people, you know, really like feeling things already beforehand. Something that's become really important to me in my life has been listening to my heart beating in my body. And, you know, just like, I feel like when we enter into these like really like primal spaces of, kind of becoming conscious of all of the internal sounds that we're ignoring usually, you know, just to have our day. And it's like, I can't always be listening to my heartbeat and my breath whenever I'm doing whatever, you know, but whenever I kind of come back to these like primal sounds, these primal rhythms that are happening in the body and tune into them and get an audience or to get listeners to tune into them together, you know, that's sort of like this like real base point to start moving from. You know, it's like, you know, the first sounds are the heart, the first sounds are your breath or your nervous system, like all of these different things that are inside you. And then, you know, I have people listening to the room as well. And so here, there are all these other sounds that are happening in the room with us. Like, you got to relax into that air blower that's happening right now. Because it's going to, like, it's affecting you. Like, it's always affecting you. Your nervous system is taking in all this information.
Yeah.
And so, like, once that happens, you know, I have people singing together. And some audiences are into it and some are not.
Right.
You're just like, you're the only person up there doing this.
Right.
And that's it's, okay. Cause
it's like, funny too though, cause you can't really know what someone's experiencing by what they're willing to do or what they look like though, you know? So I've had like total silent audiences, and then everybody comes up and goes, oh my God, that was amazing. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Well, that's important because some people aren't ready to sing. Some people are just like wanting to listen. And I think like for myself, like there's something really important about getting everybody in the room to be making sound together. Like I really like that for myself. It's like I'm kind of in some way I'm understanding harmony in a different way, you know, like getting to set something up and sing with people. Like it makes me feel like I know where the sound is going or something when I'm playing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I've already like sung with you, I've already like heard your voice, like we found some kind of harmony. And then, you know, the music I play, I over the years now I've been kind of like working in different ways, and a lot of my instruments I have like, you know, different bells and triangles and things that spin, and then also gongs. So I've been working with like a lot of music that is like really consonant, and I study tuning and have instruments made in different tunings. And so I was thinking, like, the gong is incredibly dissonant. Like, you know, the gong is like almost like unfathomably dissonant sometimes, depending on what kind of gong you have. It is generally, you know, it's harmonious to itself, but it's very different than a lot of other music. Sometimes people will get, you know, feel like the gong is dark. You know, like I have a lot of people who describe, like, you know, that they kind of go into the underworld at certain times, you know, with gongs. And then I was like, well, I want something that will allow for the other side of that, you know. So like, it's like music can, like, you know, certainly take you all over the place, but, you know, what if I have something that's very consonant? You know, so I use the pentatonic scale a lot. And so, you know, I'll play things that are like sound very familiar on the bells. It's almost like, you know, anybody could have played that. And so, like, I kind of go back and forth between, I think, music that will take you into the uncertain, and then music that kind of brings you back to where, like, you can understand and articulate a pattern that's being played. And I sort of see, like, you know, patterns as being something that people find to be safe. You know, like, if you can kind of go like da 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 da, you know, like, right. It's like, okay, yeah, like, I'm back in my body,
right?
And, you know, I say underworld, and I don't mean necessarily to go like, you know, like that. I mean, some people feel like they're dissolving, some people feel like, you know,
right, but, like, it can be scary.
It can be scary, because, like, all of a sudden you're like, I mean, what most people say is, like, I didn't know if I would be able to come back.
Yeah,
you know, and that's a really interesting thing. Like, they were so far out that they didn't know if they could come back,
right?
You know, and so it's like, I don't necessarily try to hold somebody in any one place that's, like, too long.
You haven't had anyone pass while you did your workshop, right?
You know, I haven't. And I always think about that. Like, you know, like, there is probably going to be a time where, like, you know, somebody dies in one of my sessions. And,
sorry, I don't mean to laugh. Like, I hope that's possible. That's an interesting, you know, like, prediction. Yeah.
Well, I mean, there are a lot of people who are becoming...
It'd be a beautiful way to go.
Yeah, hopefully I'm rocking that night, you know. Hopefully it's like, you know, something where it's a good send-off. But, you know, so, like, I'm really, like, considering, like, where I'm taking the listener and the emotional impact that music has on people. And so there is an emotional impact that gongs have and that the timbre of bells have. That I think, you know, I can utilize, and that I do utilize, not just, like, compositionally, but for my listener to take them to different places. And then within the container, there's also, like, there's silence at the end. And then I usually bring people back in some kind of way where, you know, I'm also bringing myself back at the same time. Where it's like, you know, we start breathing again, we make some sounds again. You know, I usually, like, have, like, a final meditation. So by the time, hopefully, we're leaving each other, you know, everybody is sort of, like, back in their, in a certain part of their mind where they can, like, drive their car and
right,
process things differently. But, like, within that container, you know, like, I really consider that, you know, kind of like a, I mean, it's like a sacred space, you know, it's like we're together for therapeutic purposes, and even if it's just like somebody, like, saw a picture of what I do on the internet, and maybe they're not into necessarily the therapeutic use of sound and they just want to hear something cool, I mean, it's still like that space was there to be able to respect that other people are getting, like, you know, something therapeutic from it. And you know, like, we've all kind of gone into something together and then we're all leaving something together. And I think that space is I think it's important. It's important for me to feel that I've delivered something where it's like I've taken somebody across, you know, the universe of their self, and then sort of, you know, safely brought them back. And certainly sometimes that doesn't happen. And then I'm talking to somebody on the phone, or somebody else is talking to somebody, or that person just decides they don't like gong. Or that person decides that they don't like me. Which is also okay.
You know? I get to choose.
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, like, I'm okay with holding space for somebody to, you know, kind of step into whatever their personal hell is and you know, wait around in it for a little bit and, you know, then
come back safely, hopefully all the better for it. Like, I'm okay with that. You know, I see that the gong can do that.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with it. You know, like, it's like, I'm okay with, like, taking somebody into heaven or wherever they need to go.
Yeah.
Like, you know, wherever the mind goes, like, I have to hold space for that without, like, much judgment. So it's like, yeah. If somebody comes up to me and they're like, well, you know, like, this and this and this and this and this, you know, came up and they're kind of dealing with it all, like, in terms of negatives, you know, I'm like, well, okay, good. Like, I give this person a space for all of this to come out.
Yeah.
You know, and it can come out on me instead of, like, you know, coming out on, you know, the somebody in their family or something, you know, or mm-hmm. Maybe it's something that really needed to be, you know, worked on.
Well, just to be aware of it is so great.
Yeah. And so some people don't realize that they have fear.
Yeah.
Some people don't realize that they have, like, anger. And yeah. It's like, you know, look, man, I have fear. I have anger. Like, yeah. I live in the uncertain. I don't, you know, I actually, like, every day of my life is uncertain. Like, I get in the car every day and I'm going to a different place. I don't know what my audience is going to be.
Yeah.
I don't know, you know, if everything is going to go as planned, and some days it does and some days it doesn't. And it's like, well, how I respond to that is the main thing. You know, do I allow it to give me, you know, crippling anxiety, or do I move forward?
Right. Is it an adventure or a tragedy?
Yeah. And so, like, yeah. Everybody decides. And I think that you know, a lot of my job is just being able to you know, deliver what it is I'm delivering, you know, from my heart, and hold space for whatever people's experiences they're going to have. And I mean, there are times, and I'm sure you go through this too, playing, where it's like, you could be struggling up there. Like, man, this was, like, one of the hardest concerts you've ever had to do. And then, like, like, I'm almost, like, ready to hide under my gongs at the end of it. You know, like, whatever that feeling was, I'm like, man, don't look at me. I just, like, want to hide. And then it's like, more people come to me that day or write me after that. And, yeah. And we're like, that changed my life, you know?
Yeah.
And so I'm like, well, what was that? What was I going through? Is, like, somebody else's life was changing, because, like, I was having a really hard time in that moment. But yet, you know, in terms of, you know, human tuning, you know, like, if the whole room is an instrument, then, like, you know, sometimes, like, trying to get the guitar string in tune in those last moments, it's, like, the most frustrating. Mm. I think that sometimes, like, we become this, like, you know, conduit, you know, through our whatever telepathic consciousness that musicians feel with their audience, where it's like, yeah, sometimes, like, you know, we're struggling too,
mm-hmm.
you know, and struggling to hold it all together. And it can still be really beautiful, you know, even if my mind was not in always that space, you know, like,
yeah.
You know, I had one concert, I was in New York recently, and, like, I went to strike something, and I sort of, my follow through, like, I struck the thing, but it wasn't, like, I struck the bell, but it wasn't, like, the best strike that, you know, I could have had. But my follow through was, like,
you're
really
judging your bell strike.
Well, no, it was, like, really terrible, and I ended up, like, punching my crotales, like, on the way down. And, like, I just, like, I hit, like, my knuckle, like, so hard.
Wow.
Like really, like, just, like, it shot, like, some kind of, like, the signal it sent through my body whenever I struck it was just, like, so overwhelming. And, like, it was hard for me to get beyond that. I was just, like, oh, you know, like, I actually, like, made a noise out loud. You know, and it was, like, kind of, like, hard to get past that. You know, but then I still have all of these different notes that are, like, coming, you know, and, like, the rest of the song, and had this throbbing thing happening in my hand at the same time. But, you know, it's just like you go forward and you don't know what other people are perceiving. And that's, like, been important for me, is just, like, allowing the process to take place, like, not necessarily understanding all of it. Like, I don't think that, like, I understand most of it, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Like, I'm really kind of in a space where it's like, I don't know what happens all the time. I have people coming to me, you know, like, a year later and telling me, you know, essentially, like, you know, miracles that happened in the room when we were together. And I'm like, wow, man, that's like, it's powerful. You know, people saying that, you know, they're going to kill themselves before they came to my concert. And then there, all this stuff has happened. You know, people are telling me all this stuff. And so, like, you know, I was like kind of like riding on that wave. But then I've also had people who, like, you know, a friend saw me this year, and a couple of days later he did kill himself. And and I've also had, like, you know, situations where, you know, somebody came to see me and then they, like, made a decision based on what they saw that, like, I wouldn't have made, or you know, and so, like, there's both sides of things where it's like you just don't know, like, you know, for, like, every time where there's something that, like, really connects to somebody, like, there's also times where, like, you know, this doesn't work
for everybody. Sure, or it did work, it just looks different than...
Right, like, and how am I to judge it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and so, you know, it's like, when I first started out, I thought I knew everything. Because, like, you know, I'd started with Gion Yoga first, you know, and that was, like, my ego, I guess, like, needed to be in place just to, like, you know, before I could start actually acting in the world. But it was, like, I felt like I needed to know all this stuff. And, you know, I've always kind of studied with a certain glee, and maybe some arrogance came along with that. And, but then it, like, actually being in the world and saying, like, okay, I've been out there, like, you know, and I'm always training, but, like, I'm out there, I'm trained enough that, like, I can, you know, effectively be with people. Well, it's like, the more I learn about people, the less I understand. And I think that's kind of, like, you know, it's beautiful in its own way. I'm just, like, really trying to allow for, you know, people to be able to have a safe space to go through whatever it is that they have to go through. And so, like, whenever I think about my friend who saw me at this concert, and he had a lot of stuff going on. I mean, I didn't realize the full extent, but, like, you know, that, like, a few days later he could, you know, decide to leave his body. Like, I mean, like, I have to, like, also, like, allow for, well, he wanted to see me again before he left, you know, like, he wanted to, you know, I couldn't stop this from happening, you know, but, like, he wanted to include it as, like, you know, final, one of the final acts in his life, you know, and so, like, I have to have some kind of, you know, wider understanding than, you know, like, how I, like, not necessarily always take things, like, you know, personally, like, I have to understand that it's, like, everyone has, like, their,
it's not personal,
their mission, you know, on this planet, and some people can, you know, some people have just, like, different adventures, and some people's adventures end in different ways, but, you know, and I'm a soundtrack for some of those adventures.
You know? That's a nice way to put it.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah, you know, we, if we did take everything personally, it would be very difficult to do what we did, what we do. I try not to take anything personally. I'm getting there. Someone asked me in a workshop I did recently, like, you know, what about all the judgment that people had? And I was like, well, it's not about me, you know?
Yeah.
Like, no one can insult me unless I choose to allow them to, you know, unless I choose to take it personally. And
judgment's a hard thing.
Yeah.
You know, because, like, you have to, you filter through your own judgment first, you know, when somebody else is judging you, like, it immediately makes you judge yourself.
Well, that's the key, is to look at how you're judging yourself and really process that, because you're just going to see the reflection of your own judgment in other people. That's going to be the trigger.
Yeah. And then, you know, often it's more about them than it is about you, you know what I mean? And so, you know, it's like, we are, like, these, like, reflectors, you know, and so, you know, I'm okay. I mean, like, I want people to like me and everything. I'm okay if you don't. Hopefully we don't have to spend much time together. if you decide that you don't like me, like, hopefully it's, like, you know, it's like, I don't even have to really know about it.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is it only bothers you when you know about it, right? There must be tons of people throughout the day. They're like, ugh, you know.
Sure.
Siergan, geez, or don't even know my name, you know, that annoying person at the grocery store, but I don't know about it, so what do I care?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, you know, there are sometimes, and I mean, you just got off a big tour, so you understand, you know, just being in different places, like, you know, being who you are,
you know, sometimes it ruffles feathers, you know, it's like mm-hmm. I'm driving through the Midwest and people see me and they're like, you know, what the heck is this person? I didn't know this was allowed. Yeah, like my friend and I were staying in Providence and this drunk woman came up to me on the street and she saw me getting out of the van and then, you know, she came up to me like later and she's like, I saw you earlier and it changed my life. And I was like, what are you talking about? And she was like, well, I just saw you and I knew that I was living wrong. And I was like, well, don't put that kind of pressure on me because you don't know how I'm living. But like,
yeah, know, but it like, was like nothing to do with you, right? It was just how perceived you.
It was just how she perceived me. Yeah. And it was like, and I was like, well, what's going on? You know? And she's like, well, I'm just trying to do this and this and this better. And I'm like, well, you can do that better. And she was just like, thank you for like walking around the way that you walk around. And it seems aww. Like you don't really care what people must think.
You, yeah, like, you gave her permission.
Well, I'm glad that being like a goofy, whatever the heck I am, can give people whatever permission it can give them. You know? Like I'm grateful for that because, well, you know, I was really into Robert Anton Wilson whenever I was young. And you know, he was sort of like one of my gateways into, you know, a lot of different, even like the word Kundalini. I mean, like he was probably one of the first person people that like I'd read that had said that word. Huh. And, you know, his idea was change your consciousness by any means necessary. And I liked that idea. Like I thought that was like, you know, sort of important that, we not be necessarily like static in how we're viewing ourselves or how we're viewing reality. He was very much into like kind of like the cosmic joke and you know, certainly in my life I've taken on the role of a fool many times. And I'm okay with that because it's like the fool can bring about some kind of you know, illumination for people. Mm-hmm. You know, and so you know, somebody just seeing me and being like, wow, I got to change my life. Well, that's like an interesting thing. I didn't even do anything. Like I was just like walking around in my robe or something like that. But it certainly goes the other way as well, you know, and you know, I want to be accepted and everything, just as much as anybody. But not every person is the same and, you know, a lot of people have different contexts and, you know, I've had for as many people as like, you know, have like been like, oh, Mike Tamura, you're doing like beautiful things, like, you know, on the internet, like sometimes like I'll do Facebook ads and for some reason it just gets to the wrong audience. And like, I have people calling me like a heathen and a heretic and, you know, like just, you know, all sorts of different stuff.
Like, yeah. Wow,
I can't believe I paid for this advertising. Like, where did this go?
It gave them something really fun to do, I guess.
Yeah. They got to put their frustrations out on me on the internet. But yeah, going back to like, you know, like the judgment, I mean, I think that, you know, I grew up in an environment where there is like a lot of judgment, I think, and certainly that can be a response, you know, like a quick response, you know, like I think it's almost like one of these biases, like you know, am I safe? Like, is this like the version of reality that I'm okay with seeing? Mm. I think is what most people are saying. And, you know, sometimes it is different than them. You know, I remember being in one solstice and somebody had taught part of the 10 bodies wrong. They were doing it in morning sadhana and like, man, like, and this was actually like, I had to change my life after this. Cause like, I got so mad at this poor guy. I don't even remember who it was or anything, but like, I just remember like he taught something wrong. I was like, oh my God, you did this. And like, I got hot and I was like, wow. Like, you know, why is my reaction this?
Yeah.
Like, why am I acting like this? Like, why am I judging this? This poor guy is like up there in front of all these people, you know, trying to do his best. You know, he didn't mean to make a mistake. Maybe that's how he understood it. Like, you know, I don't know what it was. And that really helped me. It's like I saw myself go like so deep into this like judgment. And then I like pulled myself out of it. And I keep trying to do that. You know,
yeah.
Like it's like I'll see something and all of a sudden it creates this like inner dissonance. And I have to be like, man, what's going on? Like, why is it taking me to this point of, you know, behaving like this, thinking like this,
yeah.
Or hopefully I'm not talking with, you know, in a tone where I'm feeling that towards a person, you know?
That's such an important thing to recognize that, when you didn't just go up and like think, all right, well, you have to teach this differently so I can feel better,
right. You know,
like that something was happening in you.
Yeah, it's huge. It's huge. And I mean, you don't know what somebody else needs and like what somebody else is, like there's always sort of like this like point of entry, you know, where you can connect with different people, you know, and you don't know what somebody else's point of entry is.
Right.
Maybe that's like the issue sometimes whenever we're like, you know, so schooled in something that it's like, as soon as there's something that's like different than it, that, you know, like all of a sudden that all comes up for us, but you don't know where somebody else, you know, somebody else is going to be inspired. So I try not to be too hard on myself. I tend probably like judge the people who are closest to me like the most, and that's like probably like the hardest lesson, you know.
It's
like, you should know better. You hang out with me. And it's like, what the heck do I know? You know. So like I'm catching myself in a lot of places like that.
Yeah.
Just in life all the time.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for having this awesome conversation with me. This has been so fun. It reminded me of being in teacher training and having those like really long conversations at night.
Yeah. That we were roommates in teacher training.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was great.
So fun.
I'm really proud of you, Sirgun.
Well, thank you. I love what you're doing as well. I think it's amazing.
Yeah, thank you. And you know, like I think I've told you before, but the heart chant on your record with Sadarshan, you know, that song has been really meaningful for me, like a number of different times in my life, like, you know, like where I've been alone, just like in the middle of the road somewhere, you know, just like trying to still have, you know, the power to move forward, you know, sometimes, and because I mean it's hard, you know, touring is hard, and you know, the world is an interesting place, and sometimes we need our inspiration, and yeah, so that like chanting along with you on that is you know, helped me a number of times.
Oh, that warms my heart. Thank you.
Yeah, most certainly.
Yeah. So if someone wanted to stay in touch with you, how would they find you?
Soundseternal.com.
Okay. And I will link that below in the description when I post this.
Yeah. And then I'm on Facebook and everything. Mike Tamburo, there's a few of us, but I'm not the former football player. I'm probably the hairiest version of Mike Tamburo that walks on the planet.
if the photo looks like a heathen, you made it.
Yeah. Well, you'll just see some kind of goofy, you know, goofy thing on the internet. That's probably me.
Awesome. Cool. Yeah,
well, thank you so much.
Yeah, have a great rest of your tour.
Yeah. What are you doing next?
I'm in Phoenix for a little bit. For the next month, I'm just doing stuff around here. And then I think I'm doing a little bit of Europe in the spring.
Oh, that's awesome. Cool.
To be determined.
Well, I'm planning on January, I'm going to be touring in California. And then I think in February, I'll make my way through Arizona.
Nice.
I'll probably, I haven't set anything up yet. I was talking to this guy, Jason, about doing some stuff. And so we'll hopefully work some stuff out. And
I'd love to. Awesome. All right. Yeah, thank you. Yeah.